That's insane. They can submit their bid on the job, but I wouldn't count on my vote to give them the work. My hands flew to my hips. And who exactly do you think is right for this job? Let me guess, one of your people. Weston shrugged.
I can't help it if we use better contractors.
Better? How the hell do you know anyone is better than anyone else at this point?
Maybe if you paid a little more attention to what was going on around you, instead of checking out the contractor's son, you'd be in the same mindset as I am.
My eyes widened. You've got to be joking. He shrugged.
Lust is blind.
Obviously. Why else would I have slept with you? Weston's eyes darkened, his pupils blocking out most of the soft blue color of his irises. I could feel my face heat with anger, and, oh my God, my damn belly did a little flutter. Is my body insane? It had to be. A sheen of cold sweat broke out on my forehead, and my body started to light up like a Christmas tree. What the hell? Seriously? No. Just no. As my head reeled from my body's crazy response, Weston's eyes dropped to my chest. I was mortified to find my nipples protruding. The traitors were standing at full attention, saluting this asshole through my blouse. I folded my arms across my chest, but it was too late. My eyes lifted to find a giant, wicked smirk on Weston's face. Taking a deep breath, I closed my eyes and counted to 10. When I opened them, Weston was still sporting a smug smirk, but his brows were pinched together, and his forehead was wrinkled.
If you were hoping I'd disappear, I'm sorry to disappoint you, he said.
I know I'm not that lucky, had been on the tip of my tongue, but instead, I plastered on a sparkling smile. Well, I was going for sparkling, but the look on Weston's face told me it came out more maniacal joker than anything. Yet I rolled with it. Speaking through my teeth, I said, "Why would I want you to disappear? You're so helpful. I look forward to meeting with your contractor." Since I wasn't sure how much more I could take without losing it, I turned on my heel and walked toward the door. Without looking back, I said, "Have a good afternoon, Weston." He yelled after me,
"I will. And don't forget dinner tonight, Fifi."
Chapter 8.
I arrived at La Maison 15 minutes late on purpose. Weston stood as I approached the table.
I was starting to think you weren't going to show.
I took my seat and folded a napkin across my lap. I said I would, so I'm here. Though, why couldn't we just have dinner in one of the restaurants at the Countess?
This one has dancing. I thought you might enjoy feeling my body pressed up against yours when we were in public. I mean, we know how much you like it in private.
I'm not dancing with you. Instead of my refusal annoying him, Weston flashed his million-dollar smile. He really had a fantastic smile, which was irritating beyond belief. But I was hell-bent on maintaining my composure this evening. A waiter came over and asked if we'd like to see the wine menu. I took it and gave it a quick once-over, but decided rather than having hundreds of calories of wine to relax, I'd nurse one low-cal drink instead. I handed my menu back to the waiter. I'll have a vodka and cranberry with lime, please. If you have diet cranberry, that would be even better.
I'm sorry, we don't have diet. Would you like regular?
Sure, thank you. The waiter nodded and turned to Weston.
And for you, sir? I'll take a Diet Coke, please.
This was the third time we'd been together and I'd ordered an alcoholic drink, yet Weston hadn't. I considered questioning it, but thought that might just shine a light on my drinking on a weeknight, so I kept my mouth shut. After the waiter disappeared, Weston looked me over.
Don't forget about number two of our deal.
It took me a few seconds to recall what the terms of our dumb deal even were. We'd agreed to me calling him Weston, dinner once a week, and me wearing my hair up twice a week. Why do you care how I wear my hair anyway?
Because I like to look at the skin on your neck. It's creamy.
I opened my mouth to respond, then shut it. His comment seemed sincere. I knew how to fight with this man. I knew how to discuss business with him, even civilly. But I had no idea how to take a compliment when he was being nice.
Don't say things like that,
I finally grumbled.
Why not?
Just don't. Since business was a safe topic of conversation, I folded my hands on top of the table. I made an appointment for a second contractor to come tomorrow at 9 a.m.
I have Brighton contractors coming tomorrow at 8. I'm sure we can cancel your appointment after we meet with Jim Brighton.
I think I'll refrain from making that decision until after we meet with both. Unlike you, I have an open mind and have no problem considering all competent contractors, regardless of who brings them in. Weston dropped his napkin to the table and stood. He held out his hand.
Dance with me.
I told you I'm not dancing.
Just one dance.
No.
Give me one good reason why not, and I'll sit back down.
Because it's unprofessional. This is a business dinner, not a date.
So is fingering you while my belt is tied around your wrists. And you didn't seem to object to that as unprofessional. Though, if you ask me, leaving me in the state you did the other night wasn't your most professional moment.
The waiter arrived to deliver our drinks. Weston continued to stand and wait for me to agree. When we were alone again, I said, I've clearly had a few moments of insanity, but those are in the past, and I intend to keep things between us professional from now on. Weston studied me for a moment. I was surprised when he took his seat again without more of an argument. His thumb rubbed back and forth over his lower lip as he continued to consider me from across the table. After a minute, his face lit up. The only thing missing was a light bulb in a bubble above his head. He grinned.
You think if we play nice, you won't wind up with my cock inside you anymore.
I shifted in my seat. Must you be so vulgar?
What did I say?
He seemed genuinely confused. I leaned forward and lowered my voice. Cock? Do you have to say it like that? He grinned.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again? I didn't hear you.
I squinted. You heard me. I know you did. He leaned forward and lowered his voice.
Maybe. But I really liked hearing you say cock.
A busboy walked by our table just as Weston spoke. The guy looked our way and smirked, but kept going. Keep your voice down. Needless to say, he didn't.
Is it just my cock you don't like talking about? Or is it all cocks in general?
I rolled my eyes. God, you're such a 12-year-old boy. He shrugged.
Maybe. But I know what game you're playing now. You think no fighting equals no fucking.
I do not, I lied. I'm merely trying to maintain a professional relationship that started out on the wrong foot. Weston plucked a breadstick from the middle of the table.
I like the foot it started out on.
Regardless, we're going to do things my way. He bit off a piece of the breadstick and waved it at me.
We'll see.
Over dinner, I somehow managed to steer our conversation back to business. While we were waiting for the check, I said, I had Len, the head of maintenance, join me to show the contractor around this afternoon. He was gone before you got there, but I was glad I'd invited him. He was able to walk Sam and Travis through where things were left off with the electric and sprinkler systems that I wouldn't have known. I asked him to join us tomorrow for the other contractor I have coming in. Perhaps you should invite him to the 8 a.m. meeting with your guys.
All right, I'll do that.
Talking about this afternoon reminded me just how late Weston had been to the meeting. Since we were getting along and doing so well at sharing information, I figured I'd press. By the way, why were you so late this afternoon? You never mentioned what your appointment was for. Weston's eyes jumped back and forth between mine before he looked away.
You're right, I didn't.
I sighed. Whatever. I just hope you're not playing games, like when you went to the union behind my back.
It won't be a problem.
The Countess was 5 blocks from the restaurant, so we walked back together, side by side. On our way, we passed a bar called Caroline's. I noticed, and immediately looked over to see if Weston had noticed it too. I found him staring at the illuminated name above the bar. His eyes slanted to mine as they lowered. It felt odd not to say anything. I was very sorry to hear about your sister, I said quietly. He nodded.
Thank you.
Caroline Lockwood was 2 years older than Weston, but only a year ahead of us in school because of how frequently she was absent.
She'd suffered from leukemia from the time we were kids. I knew there were different subcategories of the disease, and wasn't sure exactly which type she'd had, but she'd always looked tired and too thin when we were in school. When we were about 18, right after we graduated, I remembered hearing she'd had a kidney transplant. Her family and friends seemed very optimistic that things would get better from there. But about 5 years ago, while I was living in London, I'd heard she passed away. Weston stopped when we arrived in front of the Countess. He looked up at the beautiful facade and smiled.
Caroline would have loved this place.
She studied architecture at NYU and got a job at the New York City Historic Preservation Society. She thought it was her personal duty to protect the character of the city's oldest buildings.
I didn't know that. He nodded, still looking up.
She was also obsessed with Christmas. Thought it was her job to sprinkle it on everything for 2 full months each year.
If she were here, she'd have us both already in planning meetings about how we were going to decorate the Countess at the holidays.
I know a little trivia about Christmas time at the Countess, actually, and it involves our families. When I was researching the hotel, I came across some old pictures where there was an enormous Christmas tree in the lobby. I also read a few hundred of the hotel's reviews on TripAdvisor so I could get a sense of what people thought about their recent stays. And I noticed there were quite a few reviews written during December where people noted that the hotel had no tree and very few holiday decorations. I asked Lewis about it, and he said the first few years they were open, our grandfathers would go out in search of the biggest tree they could find, and the three of them would personally decorate the tree from top to bottom. It was one of Ms. Copeland's favorite things to do. After everything happened between the three of them in 1962 and they parted ways, there was never another tree lit in the lobby. Grace loved having a big tree, but couldn't bear to put one up because of the memories it brought. She always felt bad that she'd caused the destruction of our grandfather's friendship, and she hoped one day they'd bury the hatchet and a tree would again be lit in the lobby.
No shit.
I nodded.
Yep. So there hasn't been a tree or any real Christmas spirit here since before we were born.
Weston was quiet for a while as he continued to look up.
I guess Grace and I have something in common, then.
What do you mean?
I haven't put up a tree or decorated since Caroline died, either. When we were kids, she would make me spend hours helping her decorate the house. As she got older, she made me come over on her birthday, November 2nd, and spend the entire day helping her decorate. She did it on her birthday because it made it harder for me to say no.
I smiled. I love the relationship you two had. In high school, I remember seeing you guys walk home together all the time, or I'd see you laughing together in the hall at school. It used to make me wish I had a sibling. Weston looked at me with a warm smile.
What? Good old Spencer doesn't count?
I laughed. Not a chance. Plus, even if we did get along, he grew up in Florida where my father stowed his second family, so I didn't get to know him too well. And maybe he never had a chance with me because of how he came into my life. Weston seemed to consider something for a moment.
Would it help you to have some dirt on him?
Help? I'm not so sure. But would I enjoy it? Absolutely.
He smiled and leaned in a bit, even though the sidewalk around us was empty.
Your half-brother with the sweet southern fiancé and the engagement announced by her pastor father in the New York Times. Well, he's screwing a stripper in Vegas who's a well-known dominatrix.
My eyes widened. I knew you had dirt on him the other day at lunch.
They stay at a small hotel casino on the outskirts of town. I guess so nobody will notice them. Don't think Spence knows I'm a silent partner at the Ace. Saw them together with my own eyes. Then I asked around. It's been going on for a while.
I shook my head.
I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Since Weston had shared, I thought I'd let him in on a secret of my own.
You want a little dirt most people don't know?
Weston smiled.
Absolutely.
Spencer and I are only 6 months apart. He's a year younger in school, so people don't realize that. My upstanding father had both his wife and his mistress pregnant at the same time.
He shook his head.
I never liked your father. Even when we were kids, he struck me as shady. Your grandfather, on the other hand, always seems like a decent guy.
I sighed. Yeah, Grandpa Sterling is really special. I don't see him often enough now that he moved down to Florida. After my dad left my mom, he really stepped up for us. He never missed a school recital or a tennis match. A few afternoons a week, I used to follow him around one of his hotels after school. Even back then, I saw the difference between how my grandfather and my father treated staff, and how staff treated them. Grandpa Sterling's employees revered him, much like Grace Copeland's staff seems to have loved her, whereas the staff feared my father more than respected him.
I guess every family has its black sheep.
I nodded. They sure do. Realizing I'd shared a lot more about my screwed-up family than he had, I asked, "Who's your family's black sheep?" Weston shoved his hands into his pockets and looked down.
Me.
I almost laughed. You? You're the prince of the Lockwood family. Weston rubbed the stubble on his cheek.
You want to know a Lockwood secret?
I smiled. Absolutely.
I was never the prince of the Lockwood family. They only had me for spare parts.
My smile faded. What do you mean? Weston shook his head.
Nothing. Forget it.
He paused and then tilted his head toward the door.
I'm going to check on something in the office before I call it a night. I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah, sure. Have a good night. Chapter 9. The next morning was busy. Weston and I brought the two contractors through the construction site together, and then I headed down to where our legal and accounting team were set up in a conference room. The smile on my face as I opened the door wilted almost immediately upon entry. My father sat at the head of the table. I hadn't even known he was back in town, or perhaps he'd never left. I thought you went back to Florida? My father gave me a stern look.
I'm obviously needed here.
Oh? I folded my arms over my chest.
Did someone tell you that?
I realized there was a room full of men with their heads swinging back and forth, watching the exchange between my father and me. I tilted my head toward the door. Could we talk outside for a minute? Dear old Dad looked like he really wanted to say no, but instead he let out an exasperated sigh and marched to the door. Outside, he spoke before I had the chance to.
Sophia, you're in over your head. You can't run a hotel and lead a team to perform due diligence so we can make the winning bid to that shareholder.
I shook my head. I thought we discussed this at dinner. If I need assistance, I'll call you. As usual, my father ignored me.
You should be focusing on getting information out of the Lockwoods.
What information? He sighed, as if he couldn't believe he had to explain everything to me.
We agreed to a sealed bid process, but it would be helpful to know what the Lockwoods will be bidding so we can best their offer without losing our shirts.
And how would you like me to do that?
That young blood who came to your defense the other day thinks you're a damsel in distress. Use that against him.
What are you talking about? I wanted to think I didn't understand him, because it was unbelievable to me that a father would suggest such a thing to his child. Or maybe I didn't want to believe that mine cared more about money than whoring out his only daughter.
Use your feminine wiles, Sophia. Lord knows you inherited those from your mother.
I felt my face heat. You're serious?
We all have to do things at times for the sake of the family.
I gritted my teeth and took a deep breath before answering. Which family are you doing things for today, Father? Would that be the one you walked away from when I was 3 weeks old, or the one where your mistress was 19 when she got pregnant?
Don't be a smartass, Sophia. It's very unbecoming of you.
As per usual, trying to have a professional conversation with my father proved fruitless. I had better things to do than stand here and argue with him, so I gave in. For now. He could win this battle, but I knew exactly what I needed to do to win the war. Plus, the valuation of this hotel was going to take weeks, and my father's wife would never tolerate him being gone that long. I'd outlast him for sure. You know what? Why don't you work with the valuation team? I have plenty of other stuff to keep me busy.
He gave a curt nod.
Good. I'm glad we understand each other.
I extended a plastic smile, though my father had never spent enough time with me to understand my sarcasm.
Oh, I understand you perfectly, Dad. I'll see you later.
I saw Billy Boy is back.
I'd been working behind the counter at the lobby reception desk when Weston walked up behind me. He stood a little too close, so I moved to a computer three spots over and hit the space bar to wake up the operating system.
You seem to have a lot of free time to wander around the hotel and check out what my family and I are up to, I said. It's too bad you don't use that time to do something helpful.
While Lewis is working on filling the open positions, the staff is shorthanded. I'm sure they could use you to clean some toilets if you have nothing to do.
Weston followed me over to where I'd moved and leaned one elbow on the counter, facing me while I typed.
Doesn't look like you're too busy yourself, moving around from computer to computer.
I sighed and motioned with my hand. Do you see anyone else here? I'm helping out so Lewis can do interviews upstairs for the assistant manager positions. One of the two reception clerks is in the back working on assigning rooms for new check-ins, and the other is at lunch.
Trying to win Employee of the Month already, he chided. Such a kiss-ass.
Renee, the woman who worked the reception desk, came out from the back. She looked at the two of us and said, I'm sorry, I can come back.
No, it's fine, I assured her. You're not interrupting anything. What can I do for you?
She held out one of those little cardboard room key holders with a plastic swipe card inside.
I switched your room. Would you like me to have housekeeping go up and move your stuff?
I shook my head and took the key, slipping it into my pocket.
No, that's fine. I'll pack it up and move later. Thank you, Renee.
Once she walked away, Weston squinted at me.
Why are you changing rooms?
I wanted a bigger one. When I checked in, no suites were available.
They weren't when I checked in either. Where are you moving?
I knew my answer wasn't going to go over well.
One of the presidential suites.
I asked for a suite when I arrived, too. How many are available?
Just the one.
So why do you get it?
Because I'm the more diligent employee and followed up first thing this morning. Where were you? I saw you disappear bright and early out the front door.
I had a meeting.
I perked a brow.
Another meeting? Let me guess, this one is secret too?
Weston's lips pressed into a straight line. I offered a knowing smile before walking down to the other end of the counter.
That's what I thought.
He followed yet again.
If two guests checked in and both requested an upgrade, how would you decide whom to give it to?
I'd give it to the one who requested it first.
That's right. So that's what we should do here.
I'd had to wait for my checked luggage after our flight, while I'd watched Weston breeze right out the door at JFK. I didn't see him again after that, until the next morning, so it was safe to assume he'd checked in first. He was technically right on what should happen here, but I'd had a lot of trouble falling and staying asleep the last week, and I thought having separate rooms to work and sleep in might help my mind relax better. Every time I looked over at my growing pile of work or my laptop, it made me think of 10 other things I needed to jump out of bed and write down on my to-do list. I sighed.
Could we at least alternate? A week at a time, perhaps?
Or we could share it. We both know how much you enjoy being alone with me in the bedroom.
I scoffed. I don't think so. He shrugged.
Suit yourself. You're a loss.
I shook my head.
I'm sure I'll be kicking myself for turning down such a generous offer.
Weston moved to stand directly behind me as I looked down to type into the reception computer.
You look beautiful with your hair up, by the way. Thank you. I appreciate it.
He was so close that I felt the heat from his body on my back. I didn't do it for you to appreciate. Just living up to my part of the agreement we made, regardless of how stupid I think it is. Weston inched closer. His breath tickled my neck when he spoke again.
So you didn't think of me at all when you were looking in the mirror getting ready this morning? I think you did.
I had thought about him while I was putting my hair up.
He'd told me he liked to look at my neck, and the thought that he might get off on it today had made me anticipate seeing him all morning. But I would never admit any of that. Contrary to your belief, the world doesn't revolve around you, especially mine.
Do you want to know why I love your neck so much?
Yes. I don't really care.
I love your skin. When you wear your hair up, I can stare at your neck without you knowing I'm looking. Like this morning, while you were getting your coffee at 6:20.
Maybe it should have felt a little creepy hearing he'd watched me grab my morning coffee, but for some reason, it didn't. Oddly, I found it kind of erotic that he stole glances when he could, though I tamped down that feeling. I think you need a hobby, Weston.
Oh, I have one I quite enjoy.
He leaned closer and lowered his voice.
Next time, I think I'm going to fuck you while you look in the mirror you use to put your hair up. So whenever you stare at your reflection, you won't be able to see anything but me watching you come while I'm buried deep inside you.
I was certain that if I backed up a few inches, I'd bump right into a steely erection. And though I was currently wearing my hair up as part of a bargain to keep what had happened between us private, I had the strongest urge to take a step back and find out, even while standing in public for anyone to see. Luckily, a couple walked through the revolving door and headed right for the front desk, shaking me out of my moment of almost insanity. Weston took a few steps back as they approached and then disappeared altogether while I checked them in. I took a deep breath and tried to focus, though the short training Lewis had given me this morning on the hotel's guest registration system seemed to have gotten lost in my lusty haze of a brain, and I had to get Renee from the back to help me finish. Not too long after that, I got back in the swing of things. I spent a few more hours working the front desk, and then went to check in with my family's team working on the valuation in the conference room upstairs. To my happy surprise, my father was no longer there. I sat with Charles, the senior manager of the audit team, who was in charge of the project. Three men and one woman sat around the table, buried in paper as they combed through the hotel's assets. Charles told me he would be bringing in a few art evaluators to assess the market value of some of the paintings scattered throughout the hotel, as well as an antiques expert. My hour-long conversation added a dozen more things to my to-do list, and when I looked down at the time on my phone, I couldn't believe it was almost 6 o'clock. Did my father say if he was coming back tonight or tomorrow? Charles shook his head.
I don't think he was planning on coming back today, but he did say he'd see me in the morning.
I sighed. Great. Charles smiled sympathetically.
If it helps, you're doing fine on your own. He didn't ask a single question you hadn't hit us with yesterday.
That made me smile a little at the end of a long day. Thanks, Charles. Since it was getting late, and I knew the housekeeping staff went down to a skeleton crew soon, I figured I should move to my new room so the old one could be cleaned and put back into inventory in case we had any walk-in guests tonight. The hotel wasn't sold out, but there weren't that many vacant rooms. On the 8th floor, I packed up my clothes, toiletries, and all the work I'd spread out across the desk. Grabbing the stuff on hangers from the closet, I laid the garments over my arm. I'd stop back here to replace these with some empty ones from my new room on my way down to let the front desk know I'd made the switch. With my purse, laptop, one big and one small suitcase, files, and a dozen hangers, I probably should have made two trips rather than one. Accessing the upper floors of the hotel required inserting a key into the elevator panel, so once I was inside, I attempted to balance everything while I dug my new swipe card out of my pocket. The 32nd floor of the hotel was the top floor, and all suites. The two largest ones, the presidential suites, were located in the corners on opposite sides of the building. A full row of diamond-level suites stretched between them. Finding room 3212, I dropped a file on the floor while trying to scan the card in the electronic door reader. Bending to pick it up, I lost two of my dresses from their hangers. I barely managed to make it inside as more stuff started to spill from my arms. Using my hip to hold the door open, I dragged each of my bags inside the room and let whatever fell to the floor stay there. Sighing, I left everything at the front door and walked down the hall into the suite. Wow. Totally worth the pain in the ass to change rooms. To my right was a full living room with a fireplace, floor-to-ceiling views of Central Park, two couches and two chairs, and a tremendous flat-screen TV. A set of French doors led to a small office, and another door on the left led to the bedroom. I walked there first, and a king-size bed with plush linens greeted me. On one side was a pretty settee, a love seat, and another fireplace. The other side of the room had the same floor-to-ceiling windows as the living room, and what is that in the corner on top of another chair? It looked almost like luggage. I stepped closer, and my eyes widened, confirming that it indeed was luggage. Oh my God, they'd assigned me a suite that wasn't vacated yet. I hadn't noticed a sound since I walked in the door, but suddenly I heard the shower running, loud and clear. Oh my God, I'm in someone's suite, while they're in the freaking shower! I froze for a few heartbeats and then darted for the door. In my panic, I fumbled half of my belongings as I tried to toss them all out into the hallway before the guest got out of the shower. But, unfortunately, I was too slow. A deep voice stopped me dead in my tracks.
Going somewhere.
Though it wasn't just any deep voice. No, of course not. Only one man had that thick, hard-edged, confident tone that simultaneously irritated the shit out of me and made me want to slide my damp panties down my wobbly legs. I didn't even have to turn and see the face to confirm who it was. In fact, I probably should have just finished tossing my stuff into the hall and bolted. But I didn't. Instead, I took a deep breath and ever so slowly turned around, only to find Weston standing in nothing but a towel wrapped around his waist. The sight made my brain stutter.
I knew you'd eventually come around, he smirked. You should have just joined me in the shower, though I do love undressing you myself.
I hadn't gotten a good look at Weston fully undressed before. The first time we were together, he was behind me most of the time, and the second, he'd had on an unbuttoned dress shirt and pants. I'd obviously felt his chest pressed against me, so I knew his body was firm, but seeing all of his sculpted flesh up close and personal was an entirely different experience. Beads of water traced their way down carved pecs onto washboard abs, and I had the strongest urge to catch each drop with my tongue. It was nearly impossible to lift my eyes and deprive them of such a magnificent view, but I forced myself to snap out of it. What the hell are you doing in my room? I thought Renee had accidentally assigned me to a suite that hadn't been vacated yet.
Your room? We decided to alternate weeks.
Yes, but the first week was mine.
Who said? You agreed that the first guest to request an upgrade is the one who gets the room.
But I had the key already. You knew that. You watched Renee hand it to me earlier. Instead of answering me, Weston's eyes dropped to my breast. I had no idea how the man managed it, but somehow it felt like his fingers were grazing over my skin as his gaze traveled over my body. Did it suddenly get warm in here? My heart thundered in my chest while emotions ran through my head. Disgust. A little at him and a lot at me. Anger, conflict, confusion, and a heaping dose of Jesus Christ if that isn't the sexiest thing I've ever seen. Weston took a few slow steps toward me. Acting on self-preservation, I raised a hand and showed him my palm. Stop! Don't come any farther! He froze mid-step and raised his eyes to meet mine. The beautiful sea of blue irises disappeared as black, stormy pupils pushed their way in. We stood there for a long moment in an intense stare-off. Weston seemed conflicted about his next move, until his eyes caught on something to my right. They lingered there for a few heartbeats. And when his eyes slid back to meet mine, the air shifted. He could barely contain the grin he attempted to hide, and his eyes glinted with renewed mirth. I turned to see what had caused such a change, and found myself staring at my own reflection. A giant mirror hung in the hallway, above a half-moon-shaped table. Shit. I closed my eyes.
The sound of something soft falling to the floor caused a sharp intake of my breath. I didn't need to look to know what it was. Weston's towel.
Turn around. Hands on the table. Ass out, sweetheart.
I didn't budge. A war raged inside me. Was I really this hard up that a firm body could have me listening to commands barked by a man I couldn't stand? Again? What the hell was I doing? The door was only 3 feet away. Surely I was capable of putting one foot in front of the other and leaving this jerk with nothing but his misplaced confidence and a painful erection to take care of himself. Yet, I couldn't deny that my body wanted him. Outrageously so. It felt like my skin was on fire, waiting for his touch. He moved closer, and the heat from his body radiated behind me. Unable to make a decision to flee, but also not ready to give in, I kept my eyes closed tight. Weston gripped my hip, and his fingers dug into my skin.
You're going to have to give me something. A nod, a yes, a bending over and showing me what you want, a moan. I'll take a few blinks, if that's all you can do. I'm into role-playing you not wanting me to touch, if that would work for you. But only after I'm sure you're giving me permission, Soph.
Weston's other hand raised to my neck. He trailed a finger over my throat and traced my collarbone. I lost the little resolve I'd been holding on to. Opening my eyes, I looked into his tempestuous ones. Fine, but this is it. I'm not kidding, Weston. This needs to stop.
Whatever you say.
I'm serious.
So am I. Now turn around. Grip the table. Eyes in the mirror at all times.
It was kind of hard to feign righteous indignation when you were about to bend over and let a man have his wicked way with you. But I was a trooper. I kept my face stoic.
Hey, Soph.
My eyes met Weston's, in the mirror. He grinned.
To come or not to come? That is the question.
I did my best not to smile. Let's just get it over with.
Twice.
I sighed, smoothing down my hair. For a man who had wanted me to wear my hair up so badly, he sure had no problem ripping it down. Weston was definitely a hair puller, and to my utter disgust, I loved every last tug. Though this was the part I hated. Within 2 minutes of him straightening my skirt and disappearing into the bathroom, the cold air of rationality replaced the warmth of absurdity. In the heat of the moment, I couldn't get enough. It was as if my lungs couldn't take in enough air when Weston came near me with that darkness in his eyes. But as soon as it was over, a flood of oxygen had my brain firing again. I rushed to gather my belongings before he came out of the bathroom, though I didn't quite make it. Standing in the hallway, I was reaching for my suitcase when Weston covered my hand with his on the handle.
Give me 2 minutes, and I'll be out of here.
I turned.
You're going to give me the suite?
He nodded.
I just need to pack up my stuff.
I studied his face. You sure? Weston grinned.
I'm game for sharing, if you prefer.
I rolled my eyes, feeling more like the Weston and Sophia I was comfortable with.
Go pack your shit.
He smiled and disappeared into the bedroom as I rolled back inside. A few minutes later, he walked out with his zipped suitcase in one hand and his dress shirt in the other. Setting down the case, he raised his arms to slip into his shirt, and I noticed for the first time a large scar running down the side of his body. It was faint, only a shade lighter than his tan skin. Earlier, all I'd been able to see was a mass of perfect muscle, so I guess those outshined any minor flaws. Is that from a surgery of some sort? I asked. Weston frowned. He looked down and began to button his shirt.
Yep.
Clearly, he didn't want to talk about it, but I was curious.
What kind of surgery was it? Kidney. A long time ago.
Oh. I nodded. He picked up his suitcase, not bothering to finish buttoning or tuck his shirt in.
I left you something in the bedroom.
What?
You'll see.
Weston seemed unsure how to say goodbye. Eventually, he said,
You know I'm only rushing out because I can take a hint. And I know you don't want me here after, right?
I appreciate that.
While I'm at it, I love your ass,
But I wouldn't mind looking at you while I'm inside you at some point in the future. Maybe even tasting those lips that like to yell at me. He winked. Bite him a few times. I sighed and looked away. There can't be a next time, Weston. This really needs to stop. I didn't need to look up to know he was smiling. His voice said it all. Night, Thief.
Chapter 10. How are you, old man? Mr. Thorne grumbled. I got a hemorrhoid the size of a golf ball sticking out of my ass. Haven't been laid since the Clinton administration, and the only person who comes to visit me is you. How do you think I'm feeling? I smiled and pulled a chair up to his bedside. 2 out of 3 of those I could do without knowing, but that last one, you're a very lucky man. He waved his hand at me. Did you bring me the goods? I shook my head, pulled 10 scratch-offs from my inside suit jacket pocket and dug a quarter from my pants. Grabbing a book off his nightstand, I set it up on his lap so he could work on his lottery tickets. Mr. Thorne started to scratch off the gray latex and pointed to the nightstand without looking up. Make sure you take the 10 from my money over there. Okay. Same conversation we had every time I came by since I'd been back in New York, and I wasn't even sure he knew I'd never taken a dollar from him. The 10 bucks was the least I could bring him for listening to my ass over the last few years. While he was fiending on his lotto tickets, I swiped the remote from next to him on the bed and flicked to CNN. Hey, I was watching that. I arched a brow. You were? Let me save you the trouble. It's not the big guy with the shaved heads, kids. It's the scrawny dude with the mullet and crooked teeth spawn. Mr. Thorne spent most of his day watching Jerry Springer and other similar programs. I had no idea if this particular episode was about paternity or not, but all those stupid shows seemed to end the same way. Smartass, he grumbled. You know what they need to do on one of those shows? I said. Have a minimum income of $1 million a year for guests. Change up the scenery a bit. Maybe I could sign up a few members of my family. Airing the dirty laundry of rich assholes is just as entertaining as the dirty laundry of people who don't have a pot to piss in. Mr. Thorne scoffed. Like anyone could relate to your problems, spoiled rich kid. Someone looking in from the outside might think I had reason to be insulted by the way the old man talked to me, but it was just his way. His way of reminding me my problems could be a hell of a lot worse. He finished scratching off his tickets and tossed one at me. $5. Only cost me 10. Give me back my 10 and take this and a 5. You can cash it in next time you stop to get my tickets. Bring me one of those $10 scratch-offs next time instead of 10 $1 ones. I tucked the winning ticket into my suit jacket. We sat quietly for the next 10 or 15 minutes, watching a story on CNN about some pharmaceutical company being investigated for selling a knockoff Viagra that supposedly caused some people to stay hard for up to 4 days. I wasn't impressed. Sophia had done that shit even longer using nothing but her attitude. Mr. Thorne clicked the TV off. So, talk to me, kid. How are the urges these days? My gut reaction was to respond the same way I would if my father or grandfather had asked that question, which would be to lie and say I was doing great. But there was an old saying about the 4 people you always tell the truth. Your wife, your priest, your doctor, and your lawyer. But that was the sober man's creed. The rest of us had 5. Your sponsor. I've had my moments. I paid the cleaning woman at the hotel where I'm staying $100 to take all the little liquor bottles out of my room the other day. He nodded. Have you been going to meetings? I shook my head. Not in the last 2 weeks, but I've gone to the shrink my grandfather is making me see a few times. Mr. Thorne wagged a crooked finger at me. Get your ass to a meeting. You know the drill. You don't have to talk, but you need to at least listen. That reminder is key in your recovery. I tried to make light of things. I'm here listening to you. Why can't that count as my daily listening torture? But Mr. Thorne took his sobriety very seriously. because I'm 14 years clean, and the only way I can get myself a drink is by flinging my shriveled up body off this bed and dragging these useless legs to a store, which we both know I don't have the strength for anymore. But you have temptation all around you. Temptation right at your fingertips. Hell, you don't even have to get up off your ass to get yourself a drink. Just lie in your fancy bed in your fancy hotel room and pick up the phone and call room service. I ran a hand through my hair and nodded. Yeah, okay, I'll find a meeting. Walter Thorne and I went way back. 9 years ago, I'd wandered into his hospital room drunk one night when I'd meant to visit my sister. I'd tripped over my own 2 feet and woke him up laughing hysterically from the floor beside his bed. Turned out, I hadn't even been on the right floor of the hospital. But the ornery bastard nevertheless sat up and asked me what my problem was. I spent the next 3 hours unloading shit to him that I'd never said aloud to another soul. When I was done, I was pretty much sober, and Mr. Thorne proceeded to tell me he was in the hospital for his 6th surgery in 5 years since becoming a paraplegic when he crashed his car into a tree while drunk. I didn't visit my sister that day, but I came back sober the next day and sat with Mr. Thorne for a few hours after I visited Caroline. In fact, I visited with Mr. Thorne for 10 days after my sister was discharged. He spent half our time together telling me dirty jokes and the other half lecturing me about sobering up. It would be a much better story if I could say that had been a turning point for me, but it wasn't. A few weeks later, I was back to partying, and I'd tossed the number Mr. Thorne gave me in the back of a drawer somewhere. Then, 5 years ago, I dug it out and called him the night Caroline died. We started talking, and eventually I let him help me get sober. How are things between you and that jackass grandfather of yours? I forced a smile. Everything's pretty good, as long as he continues to get outstanding reports from the shrink and I live up to the 20 other things I had to agree to in order to get my job back. He's just looking out for you. It was way more complicated than that. It always was with my family. How are things going with that lady friend you mentioned a while back? I had no idea who he was referencing, but I didn't need to in order to answer. I shrugged. It was just a date, nothing more. Boy, by the time I was your age, I was married with 2 kids. That's probably why you were divorced by the time you were 35. Nah. My Eliza divorced me because I was a drunk who couldn't hold a job more than 3 months. Can't blame the woman. A good woman deserves a good man, and eventually she sees right through an imposter. His comment made me think of Sophia. As much as I didn't want to think so, because it made my situation easier, she was a good woman. Mr. Thorne was the only person I could admit all my ugly shit to, and he wouldn't look down on me or judge me. Maybe it was because he had his own ugliness. Or maybe it was because he was confined to his bed, and the only people who visited him were the nurse who got paid to take care of him and me. But whatever the reason, I trusted him with anything. In a lot of ways, he'd taken Caroline's place. She was the only person I ever felt like myself around. Blowing out a deep breath, I said, I've actually started seeing a new woman. Well, she's not really new, considering we've known each other since we were kids. And I guess technically we aren't seeing each other, but whatever. There's a woman. Mr. Thorne nodded. Go on. There's not much to tell. Her name is Sophia, and she's basically my enemy. So you're telling me you're sleeping with the enemy, like the movie? I laughed. A different kind of enemy. Basically, my family and her family hate each other. But you two get along. I shook my head. Not exactly. Most of the time, she's about 5 seconds away from kicking me in the balls. Mr. Thorne's bushy brows dipped down. I'm confused. So, you're not sleeping with this girl? No, I am. But she wants to kick you in the balls. I smiled. She does. And that makes you smile. I don't understand this generation at all. She doesn't like me, but her body does. We're like a tornado and a volcano. It's rare the two meet, but when they do, it's explosive. Explosive, huh? That sounds more like destructive to me. He had a point. But it was okay. Sophia wouldn't get hurt, since she was the tornado, and they tended to move on quickly. It was the volcano that sat around dormant for years on end.
Be careful. That sounds like the type of thing that can jeopardize your recovery.
Don't worry about me. I got it all under control. Our eyes met for a moment, and we both knew this wasn't the first time I'd uttered those words and been wrong. Though I appreciated him not reminding me of that. I stood. How about we get your lazy ass into the wheelchair and I take you outside for a walk? It's beautiful out. Mr. Thorne nodded and smiled.
I'd like that.
Later that afternoon, I hit up an AA meeting on my way back to the Countess. After, I sat in my office thinking about what Mr. Thorne had said. I'd assured him I had things under control, and that was accurate in regard to my drinking. But the truth of the matter was that Sophia Sterling was getting under my skin. If I wasn't watching her from afar, I was thinking of excuses to go talk to her, which inevitably led to an argument I'd get off on. My days had become centered around watching her or interacting with her, and our nights together fulfilled my fantasies. If I couldn't goad her into a fight that heated things up between us, I sat in my room alone, jerking off to the memory. I'd even arranged it so when I moved out of the presidential suite, I moved into the room she'd just vacated and declined housekeeping. So now my sheets smelled like her, and every time I went into the shower, I imagined her standing in the exact same spot, bringing herself to orgasm. Between that and how I liked to secretly watch her in line at the coffee shop and working behind the reception desk, I was turning into a real creeper. So when Sophia knocked on my open door, I felt like a kid caught with his hand in the cookie jar. I cleared my throat. Yes, Fifi. She rolled her eyes and walked in. Why did you start calling me that in high school anyway? I leaned back in my chair and tossed my pen onto the desk. I don't know. I said it once and saw that it got a rise out of you, so it stuck. She sighed.
Some things never change, huh?
Well, technically they do. These days you're the one getting the rise out of me, aren't you? I winked. Sophia smirked, but ignored my comment. She took a seat in a chair on the other side of my desk and crossed her legs. Was it me? Or did her skirt ride up a little higher today? This morning, when I watched her from afar at the coffee shop, she'd had her hair down, but it was pulled to the side so I had a clear view of the beautiful skin on the back of her neck. While she stood in line, her perfectly manicured nails gently grazed up and down from her hairline into her silk blouse. I'd assumed it was my vivid imagination, and she wasn't intentionally trying to drive me crazy, but this afternoon's skirt was a bit on the short side. When my eyes rose to meet hers, I could have sworn they held a hint of a gleam. Yet she was all business when she spoke. So, I received the two quotes from my contractors. The estimates aren't that different, but only one feels they could get the job done in the time frame we need. Any chance your quote came in? Actually, it did. I've only glanced at the bottom line, so why don't we take a look at all three and see where things stand? We moved over to the round conference table to spread out, and Sophia and I exchanged estimates. It only took a quick look to realize both of her estimates were significantly lower than mine. While my contractor felt comfortable committing to get the work done in 3 months, he'd included a number of rush charges throughout. The only extra fees Sophia's contractors charged were for things like required night differential and overtime. While we were reviewing the estimates, Sophia's cell phone rang. She quickly sent the call to voicemail, but not before we both read the name on the caller ID. I felt a stab of jealousy in my chest.
I thought things were over between you and the boring Brit. She sighed.
Can we both pretend you didn't see that just now?
My jaw flexed. If that's what you want. Sophia nodded and went back to reading the estimates. A few minutes later, she pushed the papers aside.
Well, I think it's obvious who we should use.
Maybe on paper it was, but I hadn't forgotten the way Travis Bolton looked at her.
It's not always about the lowest bidder. Her tone was defensive.
I know that, but the Boltons are also the most confident that they can get the job done, and they have a great reputation and have never let my family down.
I'll need to make some calls to ask around about them. Sophia's lips pursed.
Whatever you need to do. But obviously, the sooner we decide, the better.
Fuck. I wanted to suck on those puckered lips.
We had an obvious history of our attraction heating up when we were pissed off, but at the moment, I was confused as to what the hell I was even pissed about.
Was it because my estimate was clearly the shittiest one? Or because her asshole ex had just called her? Or did the thought of Travis Bolton hanging around her while doing the construction here drive me a little bit nuts?
Sophia's cell phone interrupted my thoughts again.
We simultaneously read the name Liam, and I put my hand out, palm up.
How about I answer?
Her eyes widened, and she sucked in her bottom lip.
What would you say?
Is it over? She nodded.
I want to bury the body deeper than 8 feet.
I flashed a wicked smile. I could easily have picked up the phone from the table, and I doubted she would have stopped me. But I wanted her to hand it to me.
Give me the phone.
My hand was still extended, waiting. I felt a surge of pride when she dropped it into my palm. The cell rang for a third time, so I swiped to answer and brought it to my ear.
Hello. Who is this?
This is the man fucking your ex-girlfriend, and we're busy at the moment. So what can I do you for, Liam?
Sophia's eyes looked like they might bulge out of her head. She covered her mouth with both hands.
The asshole on the other end of the phone had the balls to sound indignant.
Put Sophia on the phone.
I leaned back. No can do. She's a little tied up at the moment, if you get my drift.
Is this a joke?
A joke? No, the joke's on you. I bet you didn't even know our girl likes to be tied up, did you?
Such a shame.
Maybe if you had taken your time exploring what the beautiful woman needs, she wouldn't be moaning my name at night. But that's not your thing, is it? You're only into fulfilling your own needs. You know, like with her cousin.
I kept quiet for a few heartbeats and waited to see what good old Liam had to say about that. Though, apparently, I'd stumped the idiot.
I could only hear him breathing loudly. So I figured I'd end on a fun note.
Okay, then. It's been great chatting with you. And Liam, lose Sophia's number.
I swiped to end the call and offered the phone back to a very stunned Sophia. She continued to stare at me, bug-eyed, even as she took her cell. From the look on her face, I thought a tirade was likely on the way once she managed to get her bearings again.
Too much? I asked, lifting a brow.
Sophia's mouth hung open. But then her lips slid into a giant grin.
Oh my God, that was awesome.
Glad you think so. I was beginning to think you were going to lay into me. Although, that would turn into a big fight, and we both know where that seems to take us. So it wouldn't be such a bad thing.
We had a good laugh, and then Sophia swept all the papers on the table into a neat pile. I thought we were going back to business.
Can I ask you something? She said.
I nodded, and again she chewed on that bottom lip.
How did you know Liam had never tied me up?
The way you reacted when I asked your permission to use my belt. You wanted me to, but you weren't comfortable admitting that.
If it hadn't been your first time, you would have reacted differently.
She nodded, but went quiet again. Eventually she said,
But how did you know I wanted you to?
Man, that Liam really was a dipshit. Didn't the fucker ever read what she wanted and try to satisfy her? I couldn't believe she had to ask me that question, though I didn't want to make her feel foolish, so I did my best to answer without any hint of judgment in my voice.
It's just something I sensed from you.
She shook her head.
How? Do I appear weak or something?
Just the opposite. You seem very much in control, which is why I thought it might work for you to let go a little. What you like in the bedroom in no way reflects who you are as a business person.
Sophia was quiet again.
Is this your thing? You're a dominant or something?
I shook my head. No, it's not my thing.
Oh, okay. I leaned close and wound a lock of her hair around my finger until she looked up at me. Then I smiled and gave it a good, firm yank. But it appears to be our thing.
Chapter 11.
I wasn't sure what bugged me more. The fact that in 3 short, intimate encounters, Weston had figured out something Liam had no clue about after more than 18 months together, or that he'd figured out something even I wasn't aware of. But either way, he was right. While I wanted to argue about business with Weston and challenge him on everything, what I seemed to like in the bedroom was how he took charge. Sex with Weston was light years better than what things had been like between Liam and me. I'd chalked it up to the spark that came with our arguing, but there was more to it than that, and the revelation pretty much freaked me out. So for the next 24 hours, I did my best to avoid Weston, and I was successful, too, until I came out of the office supply store a few blocks away from the hotel at close to 8 o'clock at night, and I happened to see Weston up ahead on the opposite side of the street. Since he was walking the direction I had to go, I kept him in my line of sight for the next 2 blocks. I figured he was on his way back to the hotel, like I was, but when he turned right instead of left at the next corner, I realized that wasn't the case. Standing at an intersection, I looked left and could see the Countess 1 block over. To my right,